It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Good to have you with us. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Georgia is a beehive of political activity, and here to sort out at least some of it for us, Theron Johnson and Brian Robinson once again. Theron is a Democratic strategist who has just opened a new firm, former National Southern Political Director of the Obama 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson is a Republican strategist whose firm has been open a little bit longer. He is a former Deputy Chief of Staff and Communications Director to Governor Nathan Deal. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to have Theron following in my footsteps.
Good morning.
You know it's getting toward the closing days of the 6th District campaign when the candidates agree to debate but can't agree on which debates they're going to. We have two so far as we speak that they have both agreed to, one right here in the studios of Public Broadcasting Atlanta on Thursday the 8th. Each one has then committed to a bunch of others, but the other one hasn't. So what do you think?
Well, originally John Ossoff said he would do six, and now is sort of backing off a bit. What does that say? It says
he has a list of six, to be fair to him, and he says she hasn't agreed to those. She has another two that she's committed to, and she says he hasn't agreed to those.
Karen Handel has agreed to enough. I think four is enough, and I think six is probably a little bit of overkill. And I think they're hitting the right outlets for this district. I do think that there will be agreement eventually between the two of them to do a third with the Atlanta Press Club, which is the traditional platform for debates in Georgia. If you don't want to do debates, that's the one that you sort of concede and do. And in this case, maybe co-sponsored by CNN. We should have me and Theron on to do their post-debate. If they have any sense, that's what they should do. We're going to have enough information. There's not going to be anybody who goes to the polls and being like, I don't know how to vote because no one told me anything about where they stood on the issues. We're being inundated with information. But I do think that this is a must-see TV opportunity. This is something that's different than the mail pieces and the TV ads. We're going to get to hear from these candidates in much more long form. And normally these get very small audiences. I think this may be an anomaly, just as this is an anomaly on many levels, because I think many people will tune in to see this, not only here, but nationally.
You know, Brian has a history of not wanting Republicans to face the public. I mean, he's come on the show many times and encouraged and applauded David Perdue for not doing his job and having a town hall. Now Brian comes on the show and he starts criticizing John Ossoff with his fuzzy math, saying that the guy hadn't committed to the six debates that he actually said he was going to do. What Brian doesn't want to tell our listeners is that Karen Handel has nothing to say. They want to basically try to run out the clock. This is a flawed candidate that the Republicans did not want to nominate. The only thing that we know about Karen Handel right now is that she's a Republican. Unlike John Ossoff, she has not come out with any ads to really tell the people to district what she's for. So the reason she does not want to debate him to the number of debates that they should is because I think that she does not have the substance to get into a policy debate.
Theron, there are a lot of new voters that have gone on the rolls, about 8,000 since the April 18th general special election. But does that mean that anybody's undecided at this point?
I think this was a game changer for John Ossoff. When the federal judge upheld the rule and the law to reopen voter registration, it obviously, I think, was an advantage for John Ossoff because they have the grassroots organization in place to go out and register these new voters. However, that's not just going to be enough. He is going to have to focus on turning out those new voters, and he's also going to have to focus on turning them out early. One of the things that he did extremely well during the general election is that he dominated early voting. So this may be the margin of victory that he needs to be victorious on June 20th.
This is vote rigging is what it is. That should never have happened. State law is state law.
A federal election, right?
But it is the state taxpayers who are paying to hold this election. And our state law is registration ended in March. And that's when it should have been. It's one thing to think that that law is unfair. It's another thing to rewrite the rules midstream, which is what happened here.
And we should clarify that what happened was the result of a court ruling.
Exactly. It was the court interfering with state law that's been on the books for some time. If you're going to do it before the election, not in the middle of it. It is absolutely outrageous. It's rigging the system to some degree. And I want to push back a little bit on Karen Handel and substance. Karen Handel didn't raise gazillions of dollars like John Ossoff did from big money liberal interests in San Francisco and New York City. She had to start from scratch when this runoff started. And so she had to spend the first month out there dialing for dollars and doing that ground building work.
It is true, though, that lately the dollars have come in from outside.
This is a woman who raised $1 million in 1 week, Brian.
So
no one is going to complain and feel sorry for a Republican nominee who had the president of the United States of America come down and raise money from her, and she raised outside money within a week, and she raised a total $1 million. Don't criticize John Ossoff for doing his job.
I'm not criticizing him. I'm saying he had an advantage going into the runoff, and she had to close that advantage. And I give her credit. She has done that. She is a substantive candidate, and you can see her now that she has raised the money, pivoting into the issue. And I think we're going to see that next week when these debates start. She needs to use this platform to do exactly what Theron is saying, to say, here is where I stand on the issues, and don't let John Ossoff fool you with this mealy-mouthed, oh, I'm going to cut wasteful spending by cutting cell phone bills garbage.
That's
ridiculous. He's a vote for tax increases. She's a vote for tax cuts, and we need to make that very clear.
What's very evident right there, Dennis, is that Brian can come on the show and tell you everything that John Ossoff is for or he's against. He cannot come on the show and tell you anything that his candidate, his Republican candidate, who he's done a meet and greet for, who wasn't really his initial candidate, what she stands for. My point is this. Karen Handel is in a position where she's trying to run out the clock, and I think it's going to backfire on her. I know every Republican consultant I talk to, what do they say? They say Karen Handel just needs to keep her head low and just try to finish strong. No one is telling her to go out here and be this bold candidate that Brian wants to create.
It was interesting when the poll came out that showed her down by 7 points, that Republican pollsters stepped forward and said, that's not true. We think she's down by 3. It was really interesting to me that Republican strategists were saying, yeah, we're probably down at this juncture. So we can't have a I'm leading the race strategy. She knows, and I know she will implement this strategy, that this cannot be won on her party label. It's got to be won in the ring. And round one is next week.
One thing that I noticed when I did interviews with both of them is that neither mentioned the other, except maybe once. I think Karen Handel mentioned him kind of in passing. Neither mounted a frontal attack on the other. Theron, I want to start with you because you mentioned running out the clock. Is it possible that both campaigns, for different reasons, think that they're ahead and what they need to do is play it safe and not get into some sort of battle with the other?
I don't think John is going to do that, Dennis. I think John Ossoff will be well prepared for these debates. I think that he's a very poised and smart individual who's going to be able to articulate his stances on the issues. However, what he's got to be careful of in these debates is don't fall into the trap of what Karen Handel is going to try to do, which is to try to get him flustered, maybe try to pick on him for being 30 years old and not living in the district. What he's got to do is make sure that he stays on his message discipline campaign that he's done an outstanding job of thus far, and really force her to defend her career politician record, which has been horrifying.
Brian, are both of them playing it safe to some extent at this point?
Well, this is, again, an anomaly, as I said, because it is on many levels. And it is because we have so much third-party money pouring in to do the dirty work, to do the attacks. And so that allows both of them to run these positive campaigns. Now, I've talked to people who have volunteered for John Ossoff, and they tell them in their meetings, don't say anything about Karen Handel when you're at the doorstep. Don't talk about Donald Trump. They don't want to.
So now you got spies in the campaign, Brian?
I got eyes everywhere, Theron. Everywhere.
Spies in a political campaign? I'm shocked and amazed.
These are people who are not Republicans. They are legitimately trying to help John Ossoff and his great hair get elected. But they.
So collusion.
No, it's just people talking to me because I'm a nice guy.
Oh, okay.
That's all.
So it's a back channel.
It's a back channel, yeah. Yeah, that's right. I go to an embassy and I call these people who work for John Ossoff.
And you're working with the Russians to do this, right?
Well, that's how we get John Ossoff's emails.
Moving on, there are a couple of battles in each party right now. Brian, I'll start with you on the Republican side. This one may sound really technical and only for the party faithful, but there is a big fight now to be the next chair of the Georgia Republican Party.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of subplots here. Why should somebody who maybe isn't necessarily a Republican Party regular care?
That was the toughest way to ask me that question. The Georgia Republican Party right now is in a time of transition and a time of dire straits as well. For starters, they're hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt.
Both state parties are in financial trouble. I mean,
right.
That's because candidates are now able to run almost without the party organizations when it comes to money.
That's right, because in today's super PAC world, all of this outside money that used to go to the state party now goes to super PACs. And so the future of both party organizations is in doubt to some degree, which is why it's a transition. Will they go the way of the dodo bird, or will they reinvent themselves for the new century? We don't know yet. But what I do know is you've got to have smart people at the helm to make that transition if it's going to survive. And the Republican Party in Georgia is very fortunate to have highly qualified candidates with campaign experience and deep roots in party infrastructure on the, you know, for us to choose from this weekend. I will be a delegate in Augusta this weekend. So later this afternoon, I'll be heading over there to my ancestral hometown and take part in that process. And we're in much better shape as far as leadership than the Democrat Party, which Theron Johnson has bashed on this show repeatedly for incompetence and lack of vision and inability to energize the grassroots and raise money. And he's right. We do have a bigger talent pool, and you're going to see that this weekend.
What will we learn, though, about the Georgia GOP, depending on who wins? What will the winner tell us about the state of the party and the direction of the party?
I think it's purity versus victory. If they prize winning elections and putting together the organization and infrastructure that's going to take to keep Georgia red, to win in 2020 and to win the statewide races in 2018, to have an operative, a strategist at the helm is how you do that. But this group, this convention, are true believers. They're ideologues. They want someone who's going to pass a purity test often. And more often than not, the purity people aren't the ones who win elections.
What I'm looking for Brian to do is to be bold. I want Brian to go down to Augusta, his hometown, and I want him to at least encourage the predominantly white men that we're going to see, older white men who really make up the majority of the people who represent the Republican Party in Georgia. But there's also one thing that Brian has not mentioned. There's a young man named Michael McNeely who's running. He's an African-American, well-qualified. I think he's former armed services as well, and has done a spectacular job being a Republican operative. The question that Republicans are going to have to ask themselves is that Dan Bryan is coming on the show and he talks about this demographic change. And he's come on the show and saying that if Republicans don't do what they need to do and get their acts together, then we're going to be behind the growing tide of demographics that are changing here. The question will become is that will they elect the older guy who represents the majority of people in the party, or will they be bold and represent someone who can actually help them build in the future? I think that's going to be the key this weekend.
Theron, on the Democratic side, though, just in the last week, there has been that same question of a possible racial division in the Democratic Party because Stacey Evans, Democratic representative from Cobb County, from Smyrna, announced that she's running for governor. Stacey Abrams, the House Minority Leader, who is African-American, said she is at least exploring it, and everybody assumes she's going to make a formal declaration. Stacey Evans is white. Stacey Abrams, as I mentioned, African-American. Democrats, the last thing they want is a two-way fight that could break down at some point into some sort of racial fight within the party.
Democrats, we're comfortable talking about race, Dennis. We've been talking about race for 100 years, unlike Republicans who never talk about race. You know, you had people like Michael Thurman who ran against Steve Henson back in 1998. Mm-hmm. You covered that race,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did.
And that you had two individuals who were well-qualified, but absolutely. Michael Thurman was able to prevail because he had a message that resonated with white people, but also he galvanized the African-American base of the Democratic Party. So both of these candidates are going to have to talk about what they can do to advance the party, and they're going to have to be specific about what they're going to do for different demographic groups in the Democratic Party. But this race will not just be about black and white. It's going to be about LGBTQ. It's going to be about working class, blue collar, white collar workers. It's going to be about rural versus metro. It's going to be a whole host of issues in our primary. So this whole issue of race will not divide the Democrats in Georgia because it's something that we're comfortable talking about. You know, unlike the Republicans who are unconsciously incompetent when it comes to race, Democrats are totally fine with getting in the room with people of color and having a conversation about how we work together.
Brian, as Republicans watch this race, Jason Carter, the candidate in the last go-round who ran against your old boss, Governor Nathan Deal, mm-hmm. took himself out. So are Republicans expecting that it'll be a Democratic battle of the Stacys, or are Republicans looking at perhaps something else as they try to solve their own internal dilemma about who runs for governor?
Well, I can tell you, Republican eyes are on the Republican primary. They're not giving too much thought right now to the two Stacys and who else might emerge on the Democrat side. We're focused on our own race. And quite frankly, because whoever we pick to be our nominee is the favorite to be the next governor of Georgia. You have to see it as...
Is Casey Cagle, the lieutenant governor, the presumed front runner among Republicans?
I don't think anyone would argue that he's not. I don't think the other people in the race would argue that he's not the presumed front runner. And let me say, I am an advisor to the Cagle campaign, so I'm not objective in that sense. But when you read news reports, an objective third party, they say front runner Casey Cagle. I think if you ran a poll today, he would have a clear lead, not necessarily because of message, but because of name ID, which is fine. That's how it is when you're the most recognizable statewide candidate. But he does have a message that he's going to be able to drive. He's going to be able to build on that lead because he's speaking directly to Republican primary voters about the issues they want to talk about. The Democrats have two qualified candidates running. Both of them have inspiring stories. I think it's interesting. Just Stacey Abbott talks a lot about growing up in a trailer in Ringgold. Casey Cagle talks about growing up in a trailer in Gainesville. Stacey Abrams grew up very poor in a huge family in Mississippi and ended up going to Yale Law School. I mean, talk about the American dream achieved. So this is an exciting race for Georgians because we have people with really inspiring narratives offering themselves up for public
and
service.
A few smarts among them, too.
Some smart people here, yeah. Good ideas for Georgia.
I want to commend Jason Carter for doing the right thing. I mean, listen. We can't fool ourselves. If Jason Carter decided to run for governor, he would be the front runner because he ran unsuccessfully 4 years ago. But for him to come out and be a man and to be a honorable Democrat and say, hey, I'm not running, is something that I think that he should be commended for. Now, Dennis, it's not fair that we give Brian an opportunity to talk about Democrats. Let's talk about Republicans, all right? So, I will predict on this show, because you like to play stuff back, that you will see a more divisive, nasty and destructive race on the Republican gubernatorial primary that you will see on the Democratic side. If Casey Cagle was so great and if he was so positioned to be the front runner, you wouldn't have, I'm hearing now, even more four people announcing to run for governor. And so this is going to be a knockdown, drag out fight on the Republican side for governor. On the Democratic side, I think that we're going to have maybe two to three people who are very qualified, and it's going to be civil. And it's going to be totally different than what you're going to see with Republicans. But let me be clear, because I know you like to play the whole tape back. Yes, there will be negative ads. Yes, the two Stacys will have a moment where they talk really bad about each other. But the amount of outside money, the amount of these PACs who are going to hire Brian and all his cronies at his big firm to go out here and attack the people who are running against Casey Cagle, it's going to be totally different than what we're going to see on the Democratic side.
If there's outside money, it's because our primary is going to determine the next governor, and that's why they're interested in it. And the reason why there's no outside money on the Democrat side is because they know the Stacys aren't going to be moving into West Paces Ferry in January of 2019. That's the only reason why. And let me tell you, as far as the rollouts go, they immediately were drawing distinctions between each other on the Democrat side. You have not seen that on the Republican side. And I know, particularly in Casey Cagle's case, he has said, I'm not running for governor by tearing down other people. I'm running for governor by presenting a vision for Georgia.
Candidates always say that at the start of campaigns.
And then people like Theron come in and go, no, you got to be me.
Oh, those evil consultants. Yeah. Oh, that's it. Okay.
Yeah.
You guys wouldn't know anything about that.
I've never done that. I've never taken that route.
Very quickly, just to wrap up, DeKalb County Sheriff Jeffrey Mann's attorneys lost a legal round, this in Fulton Superior Court, this because Sheriff Mann had been arrested recently in Atlanta's Piedmont Park on charges that he exposed himself to an officer and then tried to flee. Brian, your former boss, Governor Deal, appointed this panel that Sheriff Mann's attorneys were challenging. Sounds really technical. Does this decision really mean that much, except that now DeKalb is going to have to go through a very long process of waiting to see whether their sheriff gets suspended or not?
Well, in the past, it has not been a very long process. When the governor puts together these panels, And in this case, it's three sheriffs that he picks from around the state. So they're peers of Sheriff Mann, who come together and determine if he is fit to continue to serve in his present capacity or if he will be suspended. He cannot be removed from office unless he is convicted of a crime. And Governor Deal is not quick to suspend or remove. Remember the case of Clayton County Sheriff Victor Hill.
Yes.
Who shot someone and was able to stay in office because the governor felt like it was the will of the people.
Well, but it also was an accident, and the victim came out and basically said that it was an accident. So let's not prop the governor, this God and this savior for all the black sheriffs across the state of Georgia, Brian.
He believes in protecting the democratic process that elects black sheriffs.
That's the first time I heard him say democratic in a long time.
These panels are routine. This happens all of the time. And in this case, what we have seen in media reports really isn't even as bad as what is in the police report. And I encourage people to go look at that. So that's what the sheriffs will be looking at. And a suspension doesn't mean he's removed from office. He will go back if he is cleared of these charges.
Theron, though, that if he were to be suspended, that would leave a vacuum in a job where many folks in DeKalb have said until this moment they felt he had done quite a good job. And DeKalb has a troubled history when it comes to the sheriff's department, let's face it, with some exceptions recently.
Sheriff Mann is doing a good job. And unfortunately, he had this incident happen, and it's kind of put a dark cloud over the department. I think his effort to suspend himself was good, but it probably in some people's eyes was not far enough. I think also what we've got to do is that he's got to make sure that he continues to lead that department, because what's unfair, Dennis, is that you have hardworking women and men who come to work every day at the DeKalb County Sheriff's Department to protect and serve the people of DeKalb County, including Brian and yourself, who live in the county. Now, this legal battle and this whole panel that the governor has put together, I urge and I plea and I ask the governor and the attorney general to work together to swiftly come to a verdict so the people in the cab can move on and the people can make sure that they can not let this one little bad incident derail the progress that they've made in this last year.
Theron Johnson is a Democratic strategist and former National Southern Regional Director of the Obama 2012 campaign. Brian Robinson, a Republican strategist and former Deputy Chief of Staff and Communications Director to Governor Nathan Deal. Gentlemen, thank you very much. We'll see you again soon.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Dennis.